Hello, everybody. This is Robert Pandia with Give a Shift. We are continuing our little podcast series here, talking to a whole bunch of very interesting people. And my friend on the other line here is somebody that you should know by name. You will probably know him by race number. And that's a big fat number one, is my friend Chris Carr from the Flash Track world. Chris, thanks for being with me here at Give a Shift.
Thanks, Robert. I've looked forward to coming on with you and discussing the motorcycle industry. So I'm really looking forward to our chat, yeah, so to speak.
Thanks. I could tell a little background of how long ago it was that Chris and I first met. It was way back when I was with Aprilia. Like, gosh, this was probably
98.
Yeah, was it? Was it that? No.
Yeah,
no,
I started
after that. I started after that. But it was, you'd won the championship, and we went to Tolbert's place up in Houston, and I brought my my buddy Klaus Nenovitz, who's a product manager at the time, and you let us ride around on your number one bike out at his place out there.
As you can tell, I've been trying to get new brands into flat track for a long time.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, we saw a prototype of a Aprilia engine flat tracker, and we saw, I think you were racing a Vore in the singles class that year, and so you've been doing a lot of interesting stuff and been really dedicated and committed not only to motorcycling but to flat track racing. So if we could talk a little bit about sort of the current state of flat track racing and the and sort of the growth and maybe we'll get into some of the challenges later, but things are looking pretty good in on the flat track world, right?
It is looking pretty good right now, and you know, more than anything, I think there has been an industry shift in the sense that flat track is benefiting from the types of motorcycles that a good number of our consumers in the industry are wanting to purchase are right in the wheelhouse of what can and in a lot of cases is a perfect displacement window for flat track racing, especially at the upper levels. 750cc machines in the 60s and 70s were the epitome of flat track, and they were the epitome of what was going on the road from a performance standpoint. And they went around a flat track pretty good too. And the whole industry, you know, changed in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, and with Supercross coming in, we saw what was a market become full of niches. We had specific road race bikes, specific motocross bikes, specific flat track bikes, trials bikes, whereas, you know, it was one bike did it all many years ago. And I think we're starting to see a lot of the brands identify that, you know, there's a window, a power plant window, twin cylinders, anywhere from 50 to 100 horsepower that can be put in a lot of different types of applications today, a more versatile engine in multiple platforms. And I think that's the timing of that is a good reason why we're seeing the resurgence in flat track that we have.
Well, just today, Ducati announced a big contingency program for American flat track, I think it totals up to $2 million now for all the different brands involved in flat track. Is that right?
Yeah, I saw that this morning as well. And I know it's something that the team at AFT has been working very hard at finding financial incentives for those across multiple brands to participate and encourage multiple brands to participate within the AFT series. And that number is quite a bit higher than what it was a year ago, and specific to the twins class, it's really big. So we're starting to gain traction, so to speak, on a sport that has been kind of, you know, put off to the side for a few generations anyhow.
I definitely got a lot of brands involved. I was fortunate in my career that the one of the last things I did with Indian Motorcycle was to introduce the new Wrecking Crew and the FTR 750 and put that bike out on the track. You got to ride it. That bike clearly dominated last year. So I was joking. One of the brands, I forget who it was, had posted up a contingency program, and I was like, I could be the marketing manager for Vespa and put up like a $10 million program for Vespa, you know, and it's going to look good on paper. But the reality is you're not going to win with that. How competitive do you think some of these other brands are going to be against the Indian, which has just been kind of tearing it up this last season?
Well, I think for many of them, it's imperative that they're competitive. And that's going to come from working hard, hiring good people, getting the right riders on their equipment with the right right frame of mind, who don't go out on the racetrack and think that they're racing for second because these other guys are on what appears to be a dominant brand. And I think more than anything, it's mind over matter. The Indian was a very good motorcycle, and it had great results last year. But I also look to the fact that they also hired the last three Grand National champions in the AFT series, and you know, two of the highest regarded crews of all time in the sport of flat track to head the development program. So I think there's a this perception that it's an Indian only show, and you have to applaud Indian's efforts. They made a big splash in the sport. They did they certainly did their brand, their overall global brand, a huge service by coming out swinging and dominating the season.
So would you give that some credit as to the growth of flat track, that all of a sudden a brand coming in and you know, leaning on history and that kind of thing? And I'm not saying that just to say, hey, I did a great job way back in the day, but I mean, the weight of how important it was to do it right just permeated through the engineers and everybody who was involved with that bike. Is this just a natural thing that's happening, or is this something that accelerated through that?
Well, I think there's more than one answer to that question. First and foremost, Indian did it the right way, the way Indian needed to do it to have an immediate impact. And they hit a home run, undoubtedly. But the flip side of that is we also know that even though the people involved you know, at the track and on the ground are race people, Indian today, the Indian Motorcycle Company today, hasn't been known as a racing company. And they came in and they made smart enough decisions to know what they didn't know and leave those that did in the catbird seat to make some decisions. They don't have a proven track record as a racing company. They're just starting one now. And you can look back to the 50s when they got out of the sport, and the 40s, yeah, they were a racing company at that time. But the benefit of them coming in and doing what they've done is for all these other companies that have racing experiences, mm-hmm. in other forms of motorcycle racing, it shows Yamaha, it shows Honda, it shows KTM, it shows, you know, all the other companies involved in racing around the world that, you know what, Harley can be beat. It took a company that didn't have a track record of racing to go in there and do that. What can we do since we know how to go racing coming into that environment?
So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about what have you seen from unique promotions? I mean, obviously the goal is to fill the grandstands. Good racing will help do that. But sometimes the greatest races in the world are seen by almost nobody, right? So are you seeing the industry backing flat track and helping bring people into the stands? And what I want to get to eventually is, like, how is that helping us sell more motorcycles?
Well, I think the historical value, especially when you look specifically at the Indian versus Harley Davidson rivalry that goes back, you know, a century, that in itself was a good story that met the ears and eyes of many people who have either gotten away from motorcycling or it has drawn them into motorcycling because of that. Now what that does is goes, wow, that's pretty cool. And whenever you have something cool, whenever you have a good story, people want to be a part of that. And I'm certainly hopeful that we're going to see people who either had a dream as a kid and for whatever reason decided not to get into the motorcycle industry, either as a consumer or as a job. Those people might now have the means to enter because they want to check off the bucket list, and hopefully the industry will have a way to engage them and retain them for the remainder of their lives. On the other end of that, obviously, is it goes without saying that the entire industry has a challenge in bringing in the next the millennial generation, or those that aren't, you can't really put into the millennial, the ones before them. The biggest problem I see is specifically at the amateur level is the depth of participants. Specific to flat track, I mean, it's kind of hard to make that argument on the motocross side, but I will admit I can't remember the last time I went to an amateur motocross race. I don't know what their numbers are doing. Flat track has been on a rise in popularity at the amateur level nationwide. We're starting to see regions of the country rediscover the sport. Some of that is through AMA-sanctioned races, and some of it are merely through outlaw. Hey, let's try this again. We did this as a kid. So we're starting to see a lot of people re-enter the flat track community, and I'm hoping that we're starting to see some of those re-enter motorcycling as a whole as well, and pass on their experiences that they had to the next generation coming up. And certainly engagement with the youth movement is going to be very important for us to sustain our industry, which as a whole is considered to be a niche industry.
Oh,
but
sure,
it's full
sure.
of full of many sub niches as well.
So is that, you know, going back to what you were saying earlier about the different varieties of motorcycles out there, have we gotten so specialized in power sports that we've forgotten the general fun it is to just be on two wheels and a motor?
I think that's a very fair question to ask, and I would have to concur. I mean, as somebody who started racing in the early 70s, that's myself. I was an on any Sunday generational racer. I grew up watching that instead of Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street, you know, watching Mert Lawwell slide his factory Harley around dirt tracks on television was that's what I wanted to do. We just saw a taste of motocross at that time, and road racing was a very small part of that. And when you fast forward 15 years after that movie came out, you saw superbike racing was the marquee class at the Daytona 200. Supercross had pretty much at that point gone to a 16 race series in all the domes. 1986 was the last year that flat track ran in the Houston Astrodome, and it was replaced by Supercross.
Mm-hmm.
So you look back, you know, just over 30 years ago, that mid 80s was when it all changed in my mind.
I want to accelerate up to here we are. I mean, we all had to sustain our lives and our families and whatever through a massive downturn in 2008, 2009. And by and large, obviously the stock market is double where it was then, or at least as of today. Who knows what tweet is going to destroy the stock market tomorrow? But and there are changes happening in society that are not necessarily conducive to motorcycling. However, that said, there's been a lot of signs about some strengthening in youth and smaller bikes and sort of this hooligan style flat track stuff. So is flat track again in a position to lead the way for some level of recovery for motorcycling?
I think it can, simply because the bikes that are garnering the most attention are not the bikes that have the biggest numbers on the dyno, the biggest top speeds.
So you're saying there's an approachability to a flat track bike, unlike a lot of other stuff out there.
Yeah, and it's in a wheelhouse where somebody's going to feel comfortable that, you know, when they turn a throttle on the street, that the thing, you know, it's not going to be like an inadvertent whiskey throttle and they're going to, right, you know, go flying off into the weeds, which you certainly could have with a 1,000cc inline four superbike style bike. So I think we're seeing those that are in the industry, and those that are staying in it are the ones that are responsible and they're smarter. I think we went through a very, very long period of time where the industry can hold some culpability in all this, is that we were lacking in education, and certain motorcycles might be getting in the hands of the wrong people at the wrong time. It's pretty fair to say, and I've seen this in racing, that the maturity level of our country is different than it was 25 or 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can be guilty of, you know, maturing at a fairly late age myself, but I've seen in a lot of the younger riders that looking, 10 foot in front of them is not as important as looking far out on the horizon. Mm-hmm. And when you widen your scope of vision, everything comes at you a lot slower. And I think that type of message needs to be sent to anybody entering into the motorcycle industry, but not in a way to scare them, but in a way to encourage them how to be more responsible.
That is, that same statement can be made of marketing managers and brands who seemingly work on a, you know, 6 month, maybe a 9 month window, instead of having a longer term perspective. You and I have worked on projects that took years to finally come together, and a ton of effort. And we've seen that in, you know, Ducati flat track efforts. We've seen that in youth racing league type stuff, where it just takes a longer commitment than it seems like most people or most OEMs are willing to make. You know, it doesn't seem like there's as much of a long-term plan out there. It's just like, we're just happy that we survived another year and let's see how the next 6 months looks.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're getting to the point now where, you know, a lot of people joke that flat sales, you know, over the last up until, you know, maybe a year ago, were the new up. You know,
yeah, right.
Sales were flat. That's the new up. It's better than the decline. And now we're starting to see a little bit
that
of increase
in sales.
That is so damn
lazy, though. That is so lazy to me, isn't it?
Undoubtedly. I'm not an advocate of that mentality. But I think more than anything is that there is too much focus on immediate return, too short-term, narrow-sided, looking just over the front wheel. And people are reacting. And I think a lot of that comes to a bit of, the social media environment that everybody is plugged into nowadays. And we forget that, you know, motorcycling is always about the journey. It's not about what you're doing in the moment. And I think that gets lost in the shuffle along the way as well.
Yeah, I think I had a great conversation with a gentleman named Ryan McFarland from Strider Bikes, and I think you know what those are, right? The balance bikes.
That yes.
Little kids.
Yeah, I wish I had one of them as a kid.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and we were joking about training wheels, and he hates training wheels because they basically teach everything. It turns a motorcycle into an ATV, basically. And you don't understand counter steering, and balance is taken out of the equation and all that kind of stuff. And but his key point and a really interesting takeaway was that it used to be that youth sports started in elementary school, and now youth sports is going all the way down to like 5 year olds, and you know, I mean, it's getting younger and younger and younger seemingly. And so how does bicycling, which certainly benefits motorcycling, how does that get in front of youth sports? And his Strider product did that. Are you seeing like sort of a generational jump? Did we skip past Generation X, where now there's an opportunity for millennials or even the next generation down to see an attraction towards this sort of thing? And what do we need to do as a community to facilitate that?
Well, I think it goes back, and I think we did miss Generation X in a lot of ways. Generation X was raised on X Games, and motorcycling was a part of that to a certain extent. But that, you know, and when we see a little bit of flat track, we've seen some supermoto.
That goes to your earlier point that it went from riding a motorcycle to basically flying an airplane virtually, you know. I mean, that was it became unapproachable, right? So now the pendulum seems to be swinging a little bit back the other way.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I would only hope that all the OEMs, and I would certainly want to encourage those that aren't currently that build, you know, the Weisingers and the PW50s and the Z50s and the early bikes, that they can continue to do that. You know, that's the thing about, you know, a lot of our brands. You know, you see Harley Davidson and Indian, for example, they're for more mature riders currently, and they're trying to attract the 20 to 35 year olds toward their brand with some offerings. But the reality, the future of motorcycling lies in the hands of those that are under the age of 12. We have to be able to engage them now. A Strider is a great example of something that I wouldn't term as a bicycle. The engine on that thing is the individual riding it. And they're pushing off with their foot. They're not turning a chain or anything like that. And getting them to learn that balance and transferring that over to, say, a PW50 or Weisinger or something along those lines, we need to have that across more brands as well. Right now, what are the choices for a first-time rider between the ages of 4 and 8? It's a Weisinger or...
Yeah. Or a little CRF50 or whatever.
Yeah, and even those are a little bit on the taller side. So right. The reality is there aren't enough initial choices right now.
And it strikes me that there would be a massive opportunity, particularly with Harley Davidson going into the electric street bike market, as that they've been endlessly chattering on about, is to have an electric-powered little kid's bike. That is not just a toy. It's not one of these Peg Prego things, but it's actually a functioning tool to learn kids or to teach kids how to ride. And the power of that brand. I know there's certainly people who are listening who are like, I don't give a crap about Harley Davidson. I get it, but that's they're the major player in the market, and having those guys create a little. Or for them to go out and buy like Oset, the little, electric trials bikes for kids or something like that, or brand something that is along that line. It seems to me that that's the kind of investment that is going to start planting the seeds for the next generation of motorcycling.
I agree. It to me, the whole electric thing is kind of foreign to me. I mean, I love to still love the smell of Blenzol in the morning, from back in the two-stroke days.
Your wife was
But
complaining about your cologne,
yeah, but the reality is, we're headed in that direction, and I think it's a pretty good observation that you've had there that, with Harley's announcement and investment in Alta, I would hope that companies like Alta and Zero, for that matter, that are doing business here in the U.S., understand that, that we got to get them started early. If they can produce the battery powered or electric or EVs or whatever they want to call it nowadays for the younger generation at a cost a price point that's attractive enough, but not so cheap that people felt like they're buying, something from Toys R Us. That it can be a way of bringing the family into the bike shop rather than just the dad. And I think that's where we're at right now, is that there's really not a full-on family environment when you walk into a Harley shop or an Indian
Right.
store or whatnot. It's become generational in that sense.
That's exactly where I wanted to shift gears next, because over the course of your career, you have worked with many, many motorcycle dealers. You've certainly done autograph signings and appearances and all that sort of stuff. One of the key takeaways from the initial Give a Shift report was that our dealer model is kind of broken right now, and we've been in essentially the same mode since, some of the technologies changed, but a motorcycle dealership hasn't fundamentally changed since probably the 70s, right? And it's like rows of headlights and handlebars and that kind of thing. We're seeing higher or pretty high dealer turnover rates for their sales staff, and maybe a change in conglomerations, and it's not this mom and pop shop anymore that can be successful. Apparently, it has to be a bigger box right on an interstate with multiple brands in it. So, talk a little bit about your impression of what dealers can do to help continue what you have seen in your life as a family tradition.
Well, I think more than anything, what I, you know, the I think the retail experience for motorcyclists nowadays has shifted in, and part of the problem is that it's gone. They're wanting to have, their Walmart or whatever you want to, whatever chain that you want to ascribe it to is. But more than anything, it's not something that is all that fun. You go into a bike shop right now, and you look around, and you see all the, the flash and this and that. The human interaction and the family and the welcoming. You used to go into a bike shop, and you became part of the family. The customer was part of the family that owned the shop, and that's not the case anymore. Corporate mentality has invaded the retail experience, and I think that that connection that you had, not just with what you were purchasing to ride off the showroom floor, but the connection that you had with the individuals who were invested in helping that experience for you be the best that it could be, whether it was hey, bring that thing by and we'll take a look at it whenever you need. That type of experience is gone now. You gotta make a reservation. You gotta talk to a service rider. I mean, it's gotten very impersonal, and I think that was the strength of motorcycling in its heyday, was that it was personal, and it's not anymore. And I think that's what's missed more than anything.
I think that statement about humanity and the importance of humanity and that personal connection is just such a correlation to what it is to be on a motorcycle. It's really hard to describe to somebody who doesn't ride why you would choose to get on two wheels with a motor, you know, or even two wheels sometimes, even in the bicycle community that's had its significant hit recently, to justify that experience. But I think that sense of family comes around, and when there's somebody who you like is into something, it kind of opens your eyes to maybe participating in that yourself.
Well, undoubtedly, growing up for me, you know, in the racing community, I know that racing was certainly all about family. You had generations, you know, three, four generations that will be at a racetrack in one family. You don't see that in very, very many other types of sport, in my opinion. That part of it, what is still there, but it's not near as prominent.
I think it's getting harder and harder to allow yourself to be human when, you know, everyone is in the sales department mentality sort of permeates things, you know, and we have a results-based measure, and that's the only thing that counts is, you know, sales, and I think you end up losing that opportunity to make that genuine connection.
I wouldn't disagree. You know, I mean, undoubtedly, a lot of it's kind of like you look at the NASCAR racers of the 90s, when NASCAR went through that explosion and growth. They became just corporate mouthpieces. Mm-hmm. There are very few characters left in NASCAR, and NASCAR was built on characters. And I think in a lot of ways, our at the peak of motorcycle racing popularity, characters are what got us to that point. And once it got to a certain level, it seemed like those who watched their P's and Q's and those who didn't say anything controversial, that kind of took the humanity out of it in a lot of ways. I mean, there are certainly exceptions to that rule today. You look at the icon that Valentino Rossi is at, what, age 38, 30, going on 39. The guy can still get around a racetrack pretty good, and every now and then surprise the world and have another win. And that's – we don't see the next one coming along with his kind of character or animation. Feel, desire, heart in a lot of ways. Yeah. There's not a young Valentino Rossi in the road racing world right now that's been identified. Now, one may evolve out of necessity for survival, possibly, but right now, nobody else is getting it.
But taking it back to your favorite world, is that whitewash happening in flat track, or is there still that sort of sense of old school and approachability happening?
I see the whitewash to a certain extent. Undoubtedly, you know, with the recent infusion of an investment in the sport, that guys are preparing themselves to be met a little bit more professionally. I think the older generation, especially the guys in the twins class, they are who they are. They're going to say what they're going to say. The ones I think that are most important long term are the ones in the singles class, ones that are going to be here potentially for the next 10 or 15 years. Those are the ones that are going to help determine the fate of that aspect of it. I, for one, you know, want to see these guys be themselves, yet I don't want them to be socially irresponsible at the same time. And there's a fine line between being a character and being socially irresponsible. And that's something that they have to take into consideration as they're coming through the ranks. They still got to be good human beings, but we want them to be themselves as well.
Well, I certainly hope anybody out there listening takes that that free advice, courtesy of one of the most generous and open and approachable racing guys I have ever met. Not just blowing smoke up your skirt, but that's a fact. Since day one, if I had a question or if I had an opportunity or if I had a project that we wanted to talk about, Chris was open to doing that and was open to all brands. So I think that's a great attitude to have towards, you know, our future in motorcycling. So I'll leave you with this one question, Chris. So let's just say we're on an epic road trip across the country, right? We're all piled into the RV and you have all the marketing managers or all the key people for that can help Flat Track grow and therefore sell more motorcycles in the future. And let's just say that everyone's had a couple of beers in them and the Blackwater tank is full, so everyone is forced to pay attention as Kenny's driving the rig down the road and you got their attention. What is it you want to say to these guys to positively affect motorcycling in the next, let's say, 3 or 5 years?
Wow, that was a very long and very deep question.
Yeah, man. And, I even filled the black tank with that. That's pretty good.
The marketing folks need to get on the bikes and experience it themselves. I think a lot of times what we've seen in across many companies are those that have been introduced to the industry via their education are coming with a background that's not really rooted in two-wheel culture. I would encourage any marketing professional to go down and go through the retail experience themselves, buy the gear, buy the motorcycle, buy the gear, talk to the those behind the counter, talk to the owners of the dealerships, and actually throw a leg over it and go for a ride and experience it for themselves.
There you go.
Before they start making the changes in which they believe or were educated in order to shape the minds of the customers that are currently there or you're hoping to attract.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, man. That is one of the things that's been frustrating for me is I've seen it in various industry events and that sort of thing, is just fewer and fewer managers who are really in it themselves, who have spent their own money on motorcycles, who came into it from motorcycling. It's not to say that somebody can't come in from the outside and do a great job, because I've seen that happen as well. But I think the particular people I'm thinking of where I've seen that happen, they don't profess to know everything, and they don't come into motorcycling with embracing all the stereotypes and the, you know, the get your motor running and, you know, and all that kind of typical Hallmark card attitude towards motorcycling, right? So getting involved and being part of it, I think, is a huge part, and that is fantastic. So Chris, where are people going to be able to cross paths with you in 2018?
Well, I'll certainly be at all 18 rounds of the American Flat Track Series. We'll be in Daytona coming up in about just under 2 weeks, 2 weeks from yesterday, and look forward to kicking off the season at the Daytona TT, and go to AmericanFlatTrack.com, check out the schedule, come see the new American Flat Track. It's not the flat track you remember from years gone by, but the guys are still going just as fast, if not faster. And the racing's every bit as good as it used to be.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of different colored bikes out there too now. It's not just orange and black ones. So
yeah, it's been a joy to be a part of and to watch and help develop. And I look forward to continuing that as long as they'll have me.
There you go. So putting a point to it. If you think you know what flat track is, but you haven't been in the last two decades, you don't know what you're talking about. So get your ass out to the track and enjoy that. And Thanks, Chris, very much for spending some time on a Friday catching up, and I appreciate it very much. And
well,
I thank you for all the work that you've done in your past career and in the future coming up for the benefit of motorcycling.
I appreciate it, Robert, and I'm thankful for the opportunity to prove that I give a shift too.
Oh, man, you are so smooth. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right, man.